Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So, let's turn to a man on the move. Harry Arter has decided after a long and brilliant career with Bournemouth to try something new for this season at least, and he's joined us on the line. Harry, thanks a million for coming on the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad.
So, from Bournemouth for what, 6-7 years now, long time there, very settled there. You've taken the decision to try pastures new. Cardiff is where you're going. The move came about on deadline day. When did you decide? It seemed like early enough, you kind of knew that you weren't getting too much football at Bournemouth. When did you kind of decide in your own mind, I need to try something different next season?
It'd been in my mind for, you know, best part of the summer, to be honest with you. And it was just trying to wait for the right opportunity. I wanted to try, you know, and stay in the Premier League. That was quite important to me. But, you know, location as well for a long time, so long-term sort of move was important at that time. But more the window went on and the way the market was, you know, I knew Cardiff come about quite late along with a couple other teams. But for just some reason, it just felt right to go to Cardiff. I made my mind up quite quickly after learning their interest. And from that point on, I was really looking forward to it.
How does it work in the modern day? Is it just all through your agent, or would somebody like Neil Warnock give you a call?
No, it was done. It was done through my agent. He just gave me a call and said, you know, how do you feel about going to Cardiff on loan? I think Bournemouth are happy to let you go on loan for a season. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. It's that simple, to be honest with you.
So you didn't feel, oh, well, let me talk to Warnock and let me see what the plans are or where he wants to play me, any of that stuff. You kind of said, well, let's go for it.
Yeah, I watched Cardiff last year and I thought the togetherness and the honesty from the manager, that was pretty obvious to see from the outset. And I thought it's the sort of club where, you know, I can probably bring my experiences with Bournemouth and share, you know, similar stories and similar experiences that I had there going to Cardiff, because I think, you know, beating around the bush, most of the public and the pundits are writing us off this year and assuming we'll go down. And it was exactly the same when we got promoted with Bournemouth. So, you know, I feel like I've had a good experience in that sense of the team, and I was really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Not to put like too blunt a point on it, but where did it kind of go wrong last season, if that's the right way of phrasing the question? It seemed like the first half of the year, just having a look back at the stats there before speaking to you, you were playing a good bit before Christmas, and then post-Christmas, first team opportunity seemed to dry up. Did anything in particular happen?
You know what, there was no sort of falling out or anything drastic, to be honest with you. It was a case of, you know, the manager trying new players that had been waiting for a long time to get their opportunity. You know, at that time, there wasn't any new players really that he'd brought in that took my place. And he just felt like the team needed a change in midfield. And it's a harsh business, football, when it comes to that side of it, because being a manager, I've got a good bond, obviously, through what we've achieved, you know, together. And as a club, I've achieved so much of them. I've probably dealt with that situation probably not as good as I would if I was in that position now. And then I picked up a couple injuries, and then the season just, you know, kind of finished for me quite early on, to be honest with you. And I'd say I was really looking forward to for the season to end, in all honesty, and just regroup and get fit and see where pre-season took me.
Yeah, when you say you might deal with that situation better now, how did you deal with it at the time?
Well, I just feel, you know, my personality is quite a big one at Bournemouth, and I've never, ever not played there, to be honest with you. I can count on one hand before this season how many times I've sat on the bench. And the manager and you know, the lads, they were all thankful for my attitude towards the situation. I didn't let my frustrations you know, leading to the team in a negative way, but just for myself, I was very unhappy in myself. Mm. I wasn't happy not playing. I'm someone that's, you know, worked very hard to get to the Premier League, but if I'm not playing there, it doesn't make a difference to me that I'm in the Premier League. I've been used to playing League One, I've played in the non-league, and playing football is my everything. So, you know, I found it hard to come away from football and be happy, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, I can imagine, I can imagine. And it's just kind of miserable. And especially, you know, big game on Saturday, everyone's training away Wednesday, Thursday, looking forward to the game, and deep down you know you're probably not going to be playing. That just takes 5% off you, I'd say, as well.
Yeah, and that's where, when I say if in the future, I'd probably deal with it a tad differently. You know, you kind of get the sense if the lads, you know, win on the weekend and, you know, you're not going to play the next weekend. And it was kind of a snowball effect of that for a while. The lads went on a really good run. And you kind of feel like, you know, you're not going to get a look in for a while now. And, you know, naively, that was probably my way of looking at it, because in football, it can change, you know, in the blink of an eye. Mm. People suffer injuries and whatever. So, as I say, the manager was, you know, really complimentary of my attitude around the place, and so were the lads, because ultimately the lads that were playing in front of me were the ones that were watching me for the last 3-4 years, and they showed me that respect when I was playing, and I was more than determined to show that back to them.
Yeah.
But just, I know deep down, when I come away from football and leading up to the following week, if I knew I wasn't going to play, I found that quite difficult.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you have a relationship with Eddie Howe where you might go and knock on his door occasionally, say, look, is there anything I can do to get back in the team? Or do you kind of feel, well, look, there's no point doing that?
Yeah, initially it was, you know, kind of them sort of conversations. And then as the weeks got on, they end up becoming a bit repetitive. So,
yeah.
You end up just coming away from the situation and just waiting, really. And that's probably what was doing my head in more than anything. And I looked at this season coming. Obviously, we signed a new midfielder for, you know, a big chunk of money. So, our manager, not once has he ever said to me, he wants me to go or you have to go, like I've heard in some situations at some clubs. There was no freezing out or anything silly like that. I played in all the pre-season games, and it was just a decision, you know, kind of on the day, to be honest with you. It was,
yeah.
I want to be involved, I want to be playing, and I can't afford to have another season like the one just gone. And I respect the manager's honesty. He couldn't promise that wasn't going to be the situation, and that's what the made me make that decision.
Yeah, so I guess life gets a bit mad then and manic, and deadline day happens, you make the move, and it's up in sticks and everyone to Cardiff kind of thing?
On the day, it was literally just, you know, I drove from Bournemouth up to Cardiff. It was just by myself to do the medical, and you know, you're driving up. I was driving up on my own, and not for one minute did I ever think, I'm not going to do this. But there, you know, there was part of me that was thinking it's a shame to be leaving Bournemouth in this way. But then you understand that's how football works. Mm. As I said earlier, it is a harsh business in that sense. And I know for me, the number one thing in my life is, other than family, is football. So I'm just, as I say, yeah, honestly, very excited just to get the season going.
And I guess, I mean, it's clear from talking to you that breaking into that Cardiff first team is very much the aim. I'm not as familiar with the Cardiff team. Is there big competition there? Is it something you feel, if you play well, you'll be in the team?
Yeah, I think, you know, the manager's made some good signings in midfield. He signed a Spanish lad from, you know, Real Betis. That's funny enough, played against him last week or the week before in a pre-season game, and he was probably the best player on the pitch that night. So added on top of that is the midfielders they've already got there. It's going to be, you know, a tough competition for places. But I feel confident that, you know, if I get given my chance, you know, I'll take it and hopefully play a big part in the season.
Yeah, I guess from afar, we don't appreciate sometimes just how difficult it is and just how high the standard is. Because I saw a really brilliant quote from you last year, and you were talking about all the players who arrive in the Premier League. It's very much a global league now. And you were saying, you know, back in the past, I used to see top clubs paying big money to bring in foreign midfielders, and there was a thought in my mind that I could do as good a job as them if I got a chance at a big club. But then you said, but I've changed my mind on that now. He says, when you play against some of these guys, they are on a different level. There are some talented sportsmen in the world. Some are just born bigger and better than you might have been. Some of the guys you come up against in the Premier League are just massive physically and so gifted as well. Which is kind of just an insight into the level where, like, I mean, you, like, even just physically, someone like Paul Pogba, you're just like that. That is just a dogfight already that you're the lesser in.
Yeah, and you know what? You look at some of the players that you know brought in, especially to the top six clubs, and there's some unbelievable players. But one thing I will say that I don't think that is completely fair on the British and the Irish market. If you look at it, you know, this summer. It was really poor for English and Irish and you know the players that have been brought up in this sort of part of the world it was quite poor because you know Wolves and Fulham two clubs that stick out that you know they went crazy with their signings and you kind of scratch your head and think you know if it works then you know brilliant but if it doesn't then you know why not give that chance to but, you know, for the players that got you promoted, for example. But I do agree. You know, the money being spent on these players, you know, they've been watched, I'm sure, for, you know, months and months before these teams. So, you know, I have no problem when players come in and, you know, clubs spend massive amounts of money on them. If they feel that's going to improve, you know, the club and it will drive the other players on at the club, then, you know, I'm all for that. Mm. So
I guess, I mean, when you, the first couple of months when you played in the Premier League, I presume it felt very, very fast and very, very technical. To some extent, you just must be a bit more used to it now.
Yeah. I'll say the first, you know, few games, especially against the top teams, you know, you have more of an understanding next time you play against them that, you know, when's the right time to sit off and when's the right time to press because, you know, one opportunity is, you know, what these teams need really, especially the top four or five, it's such a harsh league in that one mistake can lead to a goal and that can ultimately make you lose the game. So, I'd like to feel like you learn that side of the game a lot better and experience definitely helps with that.
Yeah. Last one, does Martin O'Neill come into your thinking when you're making a move like this? Is it the kind of thing where you ring an international manager and get some advice, or is it just kind of look, you know, it's sort of my own business, and we'll talk down the line whenever I see you in Irish camp.
I didn't speak to the manager, no, but I think it was you know an obvious sort of decision for me, you know, international wise. It was if I'm not playing for Bournemouth, or I wasn't given the opportunities that I'd hoped, you know, based on the way last season went and.
Yeah,
you know, the manager made it quite clear that he can't afford to pick players that are not playing for months on end. And, you know, I was thankful for him in the summer to pick me for the summer games because it was, you know, months before, months after, you know, my last game.
Yeah.
So I personally feel if it got to the point where, you know, I hadn't played coming up to these games now, I wouldn't have expected to be in the squad and probably he wouldn't have been able to physically put me in it anyway. I wouldn't have been ready physically or mentally to play in such a big game. So naturally, I feel international-wise, I made the right decision doing what I did.
Yeah, because you played in the Paris game, didn't you? You played against France?
I come on for 20 minutes against France and 10 minutes against... 10 minutes against... USA, but I was struggling before I met up with the camp. I had a bit of a calf injury and there was a bit of confusion in not knowing I actually had the injury. The medical teams didn't pass the information on too well to the Irish medical team, so there was a bit of a confusion with that.
Right. I know it was just a friendly. Did you feel when you were looking at France that night or on the pitch against them that you were looking at, you know, kind of world champions in waiting? Was there a big gulf, big difference? Anything jump out at you about that game?
Well, I think naturally when you look at just the team sheet, you know how much quality they had just with the names they had.
Yeah.
You know, it being a warm-up game, then I'm sure they wasn't full throttle, but the way they controlled and dictated the game, you knew you was playing against top players.
Yeah.
To win a World Cup, you need more than that. They obviously had, you know, a good bond between the group. It was, I was really impressed with France throughout, to be honest, the World Cup, even the first few games when they got, you know, a bit criticised for the way they were playing.
Mm.
for them to come back the way they did and not let the media or anyone affect them. You know, they're worthy winners of the World Cup.
Yeah. Listen, we'll let you go. Really good with your time. And, I mean, the Bournemouth period has been really successful for you on the whole, from League One through until Premier League level. So the very best of luck with Cardiff. We might check in once or twice across the season. Best of luck with things.
Tom, man, thank you very much.
There you are. That was Harry Arter speaking to me earlier on, Dan. So he's made the move, wasn't content with being on the bench, wants first team football. Cardiff seems like a move he's happy with, where he'll get some game time. And even just from an Irish point of view, if nothing else, to have a midfielder playing in the Premier League is not something that we're overly burdened down with.
No, look, we're not really. I mean, you look at the weekend just gone, there was eight Irish players involved in the Premier League, and most of them defenders, you know, and fullbacks. Now, I know Arter wasn't involved himself because of the terms of his loan deal. Shane Long wasn't picked by Southampton. Robbie Brady still out injured. Greg Cunningham was on the bench for Cardiff, albeit another defender. So, I mean, there will be more involved across the season, but not too much more. So, I think Arter, you know, it was good that all the interest in him was Premier League, it seemed. You know, I'm sure there was interest from below that, but I mean, his options seemed to be Premier League based. And he has a good reputation, you know. Just looking at the reviews, and like, Cardiff fans seemed pretty happy to get him. They'd had a pretty quiet summer of activity, and he's someone who's proved he can play Premier League. Like, it's obviously, I mean, I know obviously he's touched on it there, and I know Eddie Howe has also spoken about you know, how he still holds him in high regard, but for whatever reason, just, you know, his face didn't fit the second half of last season. And but he is a Premier League level player, I think. You know, he's been very effective at that level in the past, and he probably quite suited to Cardiff. But to touch on your general point, yeah, I mean, Jeff Hendrick did play for Burnley at the weekend. You know, beyond that, I mean, James McCarthy is the other one who can come back actually at some point across the season, but
we're
not going into a long list.
No, the other one, and I know you watched, I know you plonked down and watched both games on Sunday. Declan Rice did 45 minutes.
Of course, yeah.
And certainly found the likes of Keita and Mane running around him is not as straightforward as it might first appear, and it doesn't appear very straightforward in the first place.
No, he got a bit of a chasing all right, and he was taken off at half time. Now, I don't think you can judge him as a midfielder based on that game. I mean, Liverpool were patently superior in all areas of the pitch. However, it was a complete lesson for him, because pretty much all of his games for West Ham last year were in a defensive role. And okay, with Ireland, we've seen him, you know, snippets of him in midfield, and also in the USA game where he was very good. But primarily, he's played most of his midfield football at age group level, at underage level. That's where he plays for under-21s. So this was like an education. You hope that it's just, I mean, it made a bit of sense in some ways to try and get Wilshere a bit deeper and get him on the ball. And Rice was the one to sacrifice, that he wasn't probably doing enough in terms of closing Liverpool down, which I assume was his brief, you know, next to Noble. But I still think, you know, I sort of posted up a tweet about it, that he was playing, and a few comments after suggested, well, that's it, he can't play midfield at that level. I mean, that's just a bit hasty. Sure. Yeah. Because we've seen with Ireland, actually, that really, for the point you mentioned, we don't have a huge amount of midfielders, and you know, his positivity in there at times and trying the forward pass and just getting the team moving a bit might just be what Ireland need in that position. Certainly if McCarthy came back at full tilt, you could see then he'd be very similar, you know, in terms of what he might do. And you know, we need that type of player in a team, sort of presuming that you want Hendrick pushed on a bit further forward. I mean, Arter is another player who would be very useful in there. We've got David Myler. And I mean, Arter, it's strange, his Irish career still hasn't fully like ignited, really.
He had like 13 caps.
The one good night in Cardiff where he played well, but the playoffs just didn't happen for him. You know, he was one of the players that struggled a bit. And he's never really had a sustained run. So maybe, you know, this autumn in the Nations League and these games might be his chance to finally really put a run of 4, 5, 6 games together and show what he can do.
As for the other game, Arsenal-Manchester City, it's been quite interesting to watch the fallout, in that I think a lot of the frustration, the Arsene Wenger frustration, which was temporarily eased and taken care of for the summer, and then there was hope that Emery would come in and change things dramatically, is bubbled up again very, very quickly, I've noticed. So even, you know, Sam Allardyce yesterday talked about the, you know, this stupid passing, we're obsessed with it in this country, and that was the thing. But Tony Adams like very quickly has got on Emery's case here and was saying, well, why is Peter Cech and co? He shouldn't be. We bought a new keeper. And then why did he not just agree on the back four early on and whoever the two screening midfielders were going to be and actually work on this and just arrive ready to go? Instead, we're as muddled and Arsene Wenger-esque as ever. Like, it was a, and like Adams was really angry. I was listening to the radio interview he gave. Really, like, you know, as if Emery's been making the same mistakes in a Wenger-esque way for like 7 years and he's lost his way. Tedder, it's almost as if very quickly the fact that the players were making, it appeared very similar to how they did under Wenger, has put Emery under the spotlight far quicker than any manager after one game.
Yeah, I mean they were. There was spells either side of half time where they competitive, where they were reasonably competitive, but ultimately, like, for a start to a new era, you have the ground empty and with a few minutes to go, and this was like a 2-0 thrashing, really, you know, in every respect. It was a show of strength from Man City side that was missing a good number of its best players. So it is interesting, the point about, you know, the Adams point about the defence and, you know, not having worked on something, because one of the discussion points last week coming into the season was that, well, Emery's had, compared to say to Sarri, like Emery's had more time to work with his players. He'd done some of his business reasonably earlier. I think he'd like signed 4 or 5 players around World Cup time, you know. So they weren't in a last minute scramble, whereas Chelsea have had a lot of instability, say, last week. So in that regard, I think you're entitled, you know, you're entitled to be a bit of criticism aimed in his direction. He did pick quite a young side and played young players in certain areas. And I think sometimes managers, when they do that, they assume there'll be a bit of understanding that this is the start of a project. I mean, look, I fancy these young players. You have to give them time. This is a tough education for them. But it wasn't really a statement. You know, it wasn't a statement to say, this is what I'm bringing to the table here. And the fixture list hasn't been kind. But still, I think you're entitled to expect more without hitting into crisis mode.
I mean,
you know, but like Arsenal, they've become so accustomed to crisis mode that it doesn't take like that long to flick towards default. You know, and there was always going to be a difficult adjustment period. But I don't think the criticism is ridiculous either. You know, I mean, it was, you know, just on your own patch to be comprehensively outplayed. Now, I'd still be of the view that Man City might do that to most teams most weeks, and that just may be it. But when you're looking for that big kickoff, early season optimism, it's not great to be dismantled that way.
It's not Marcelo Bielsa-esque, as we'll be talking about in a few moments' time. And you mentioned City, it was like a show of strength.
They didn't even play that well. Like, you know, like they didn't.
It's 6 to 7 out of 10.
Yeah, they didn't play that well. I mean, there was a brilliant 20 minutes at the start. But I think the question with City, and it's a valid point, I mean, no team has retained the Premier League in 10 years.
Isn't that an extraordinary?
It is, yeah. I mean, should be aware of it, but I was almost surprised when these pieces started popping up about that. So, oh, yeah. Like, even. That includes a chunk of a Ferguson era as well.
Yeah.
Not to mention sort of, you know, the various eras. But obviously when City won the 2 league titles, it was still a bit like question marks over their managers. You know, as in Mancini wasn't hugely popular with the dressing room and had probably had a shelf life in terms of the fiery relationship he had. Pellegrini maybe just, was he the strong leader? And also, I think the one concern you would have is that clearly there was questions about the desire of some of the players in the dressing room to press on. Mm. Similar to Chelsea, when they have good year, bad year, good year, bad year.
We had nothing that felt anything approaching a dynasty.
No, but with Pep, it does feel like they're building. And how do you tackle sort of desire and all these things? Well, if you're able to have a bench with Sané and De Bruyne, with Silva to still come back into the squad, with Jesus on the bench, you know, Mahrez coming in, any player that sort of is complacent, there's a penalty that they will pay. And okay, other title winning teams should have had that, but it just feels with City that it's not the end of a journey winning the league. It's more the sort of the 30% stage of a journey, and that's what everyone else should be a bit worried about.
Yeah, it's frightening, and there's basically no downsides to having competition for places, except there was the one moment where I thought that is a player who is clinging on to his jersey or any minutes he can get in the jersey, and that was when Aguero should have squared the ball for De Bruyne and he shot. And I really think if he was assured of his place and he was if he was like more comfortable, because he definitely saw De Bruyne, he's too good not to. I just think he thought, I have to make a statement. Jesus is on the bench, they're all coming back. That was a classic moment of somebody who knows the manager is looking for any reason to drop him.
And yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, there was like huge speculation that Aguero just didn't fit the Guardiola plan at the start. And Jesus was very much coming in to replace him. Like, I don't know, that could be overanalyzing one incident a bit much, but I do, you know, I take your point, like, that there is a certain pressure. And I don't think Mahrez was too impressed when he was coming off either as well. But I think, you know, they've got options there to deal with that if he's having a bit of a lull. So, yeah, there's a few downsides. I mean, obviously, Europe and all of that will present them a challenge, because that's something that he's obviously very intent on doing, and there's an element of rotation and the management that comes with that, which is challenging.
Yeah.
But really beyond that, I mean, I'm a huge De Bruyne fan, and an injury to him, say, would be devastating, but they're far more equipped than other sides to cope. I mean, if Salah gets to pick up a serious injury, or Firmino even for Liverpool, you're thinking they're really struggling here. Mm. Whereas with City, like, Bernardo Silva has come on, he started, and it feels like in every position, maybe bar still defence, that they have a couple of options to cope with it.
For all the talk of how good Liverpool look, and they do look really good, they had a great year last year on the injury front.
Yeah.
They really do need that to happen again. But, I mean, geez, when everybody's fit, they are actually... they're going to swat teams aside throughout this year.
But they were very good. Again, I mean, West Ham were poor, but Liverpool were good. And like, they dropped a lot of silly points at Anfield last year. As much as they were unbeaten, there were games where teams just sat in a bit and frustrated them. And, you know, Kaido was good in terms of just picking up positions to ask the opposition defence a few more questions, you know, and sort of help to bring them out of position and stuff. So they were striking, and yeah, I mean, they are a team you'd love to sit down and watch.
Yeah.
But they still, I mean, they were 25 points behind, you know, and you're just thinking, where are the games here where City are going to struggle? If they could go to Arsenal away, and that's probably, like, you would think that should be one of the top 6-7 most difficult fixtures of a season, and they made it look very routine coming off the back of the, albeit meaningless, sort of Community Shield, but still, it doesn't look like there's any sense of the old second season syndrome here. Although it's not the second season for Pep, but you know, in terms of the title hangover.
Yeah, no, it's certainly shaping up that way after weekend one. We'll take a short break. The thing we wanted to touch on next was Marcelo Bielsa, legendary coach. We talked to Tim Vickery about him so many times. He has so many disciples, not least Guardiola and Simeone, and he brought Pochettino through as a player, and Pochettino seems to worship him as well. And he has pitched up at Leeds and has made a really, really good start. They beat Stoke 3-1 in the first game. They whooped Derby 4-1 then. And it seems Bielsa is proving a real hit. So we're going to talk to Adam Pope of the BBC over in Yorkshire next.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. So we've been wanting to check in on Marcelo Bielsa, who has made a fantastic start to life at Leeds. They beat Stoke 3-1 early doors, and then beat Frank Lampard's Derby County 4-1. And have been shaping up very, very nicely indeed. Bielsa's a bit of a legend in his own time. Earlier on, before the Bolton game this evening, we spoke to Adam Pope of the BBC. And Adam, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Dan.
So Bielsa, as I said, is a bit of a legend in his own time. Newell's Old Boys, they've named the stadium off him. He managed them 30 years ago almost. And since then, he's been with Argentina and Chile and Athletic Bilbao and Marseille and Lazio and Lille, and his disciples are everybody from Guardiola to Simeone to Pochettino. So I can imagine the excitement when word came through that Bielsa was rocking up at Leeds.
It was an incredibly ambitious appointment, which took a long time as well to get over the line. And that wasn't because of his sort of salary demands, which apparently was sorted out quite early, although we understand it's more than £2 million, making the highest paid, you know, head coach in the history of Leeds, no doubt. But the fact that he wanted the I's dotted and the T's crossed and everything put in a certain way, because he is absolutely meticulous. And I think his whole philosophy and his approach, not just to football, but what we're learning to life, is incredibly rigorous. And he totally believes in his conviction and how he wants to play. And he has a humility as well, which probably betrays all those sort of achievements and that sort of world renown that he has. You expect him to be a little bit more brash if you like, but not at all. Very humble man, very cerebral, very intelligent, and is obviously in the early part of this season is getting his message across despite not being able to speak English.
Well, you bring us on to that. So I mean, One of the great interviews already of the season has arrived. I mean, it was just fantastic stuff here. We've got a quick clip for people. This was Bielsa being interviewed after the win against Stoke. Keith Andrews, obviously involved with Sky, is a regular in the show here. He said it was quite difficult for Sky to even convince Bielsa to do this interview. I mean, this was painstaking work to get him to come out in front of the cameras. And when he came out, boy, did he give him everything.
Marcelo, what are you expecting from your first game in English football?
Espero, estoy ilusionado y deseoso de que esto comience.
I am very excited and I'm happy to be here.
I am very happy that this begins.
You'll have learned a lot about your squad over pre-season, but will you really find out about them today in a game against the title favourites?
Yes, sí, lo que dice es cierto.
Yes, you are right.
Yes, you're right.
Adam, I think we're all looking forward to your signature 45-minute sit-down with Bielsa sometime soon.
Well, when we've sat down with him, we just get the response through the translator. And because now the sort of furore around him has died down a little bit, you know, you haven't got as many foreign journalists coming to do, you know, feature pieces on him. The Premier League has started, of course, so a lot of the journalists that have been in and asking questions have sort of stepped away. He's starting to open up a little bit more. And he is absolutely fascinating because you can actually speak to him about the football in depth. He'll talk to you about how he wants to play and what his philosophy is. And also there's absolutely none of this sort of pretending that players aren't injured. He'll actually name his squad for you more or less who he's going to play because he believes in what he's doing. And he really is refreshing, to be quite honest with you.
So his English is better than that Sky interview suggests?
Oh, totally. He understands a lot more than what he's letting on. Because I've noticed when you ask a question to the translator, you can see him sort of nodding or reacting already. Yeah. But also he did tell us that his mum sent him to English lessons for about 15 years apparently. He was 63, so it was obviously a long time ago when he was back in Argentina. So yeah, but I think what it is with him is that he wants his message to be absolutely clear. He's very precise and he doesn't want to dilute it or mess it up by getting the English wrong, if you see what I mean. So yeah, that's why he relies heavily on the translator.
Adam, tell us a bit about his attention to detail, because I think you mentioned the number of pieces that were sort of written about him before the start of the season, and we're reading stories of, you know, at the interview he was able to reel off lists of like championship formations and tactics, and also the double training sessions that have become the norm now. I mean, are you hearing sort of locally that these anecdotal tales are true and that the whole daily environment has changed?
Absolutely, and I think just to show you his attention to detail would be that he wanted certain changes making at the training ground. And also when he went up to the training ground, he was literally a bit old schoolish, you'd say, a bit like your mother-in-law might have done at one point, would be to run their finger with a glove across surfaces to see if there's any dirt there, you know. So that's the sort of attention he's going to. You can tell in terms of the football, he watched, I think it was all 51 videos of the Leeds games from last season before sort of committing himself to the club. So he knew everything about every player that was already at the existing squad, which was quite incredible, the fact that he's sort of devoted that much time and effort to do that. He has completely immersed himself, and he actually, although he won't admit this because he says that it was a private matter, but one of the national papers here said he wanted players to understand what it was like to earn to work for a ticket, for the price of a ticket. So allegedly he had them picking up litter around the training ground for 3 hours, which was worked out that, you know, by the time they'd done that, that was basically the amount of time it would take somebody to earn the money to go and pay for a ticket to watch at Elland Road.
Yeah, David Heitner in The Guardian, that extraordinary thought, really, the team picking up litter for 3 hours. I'm sure they were thrilled. So,
but he could get away with it. That's the thing. Who else could get away with it?
Very few. Yeah. And he's not afraid to walk away, as we've seen at Marseille and Lazio. I mean, we've walked out on these clubs a game into a season or two games in if he feels that things aren't being done the way he likes them. So a very, very good start. The Stoke game, 3-1, a 4-1 win away to Derby. Keith Andrews, who I mentioned, was in here talking after the Stoke game, and he was at it and said the football was everything he could have hoped for from a Bielsa team. The movement, the passing, the pressing. He said it was extraordinarily good. Give us your take on what you've seen thus far in the two games, and how do these players, these same players largely, compare to what they were producing last year?
Yeah, it's all those things that Keith has said. I've never seen a Leeds side in the sort of 12, 13 years that I've been covering them start so well and to a strategy and to a plan that was so effective. I know we're only two games in. So that is right. And the thing that is really interesting, he talks about a high press and, you know, reclaiming possession high at the park whenever they can. They're doing that. The second goal against Derby, I think, was a perfect sort of reflection of the side that he wants to be. You know, Barry Douglas, who's been the one signing that's come in that's really played the first two games. The others haven't really played yet. He reclaims the ball, delivers it beautifully. Alioski, who hasn't been able to put a cross in for the whole of last season of that quality, finds ahead of Kamal Roof, who buries it. And when you look at that, he's finding things from players or encouraging players to behave or to play in a way that he's making them believe that they can do. And that might be a bit more discipline for some players. And I mentioned Alioski in particular. And then for other players, he's given them the license to do what they have to do or have them play out of position, or what we might expect them to play normally, has them play out of position like midfielders in the middle of defence like Calvin Phillips, for instance, so they can play out from the back. So it's a bit of a total football sort of style, if you like, if you want to be a bit glib about it. But he's certainly getting more out of these players than what we've seen in the past sort of year or so. Whether they can sustain it is going to be the big question.
Mm. I mean, Adam, you mentioned you've been covering Leeds for, 12 or 13 years, and that's pretty much been an unhappy time in many ways, you know.
Yeah, well, is this the Adam Pope curse? Is that what this is called?
Yeah, picked them up in the Championship, took them to League One for the first time in their history.
Yeah, listen, I can relate to that, having started covering the Irish team around 12, 13 years ago. So yeah, but what I would say is, though, it has been obviously a draining time, and you had the Chelino era and the associated sort of controversy. What has this done for the mood around the city, around the club, the general sort of atmosphere around the place?
Well, let's have a look at an example for tonight. You know, they're playing Bolton Wanderers in the Carabao Cup, the first round. Normally these are weekly attended games. They thought they'd get 15,000. They're already talking about 20,000-21,000 and encouraging people to come down here, to get the tickets early ahead of the game. So it's creating that vibe. There is a massive buzz. And I think the biggest thing is a lot of people, like you're saying, we've all seen this before, good start, say. It seems to be built, certainly on a plan and on a strategy that's effective and has been working over the summer and has, from the office, has worked straight away in terms of the Championship. So that's good. So what it's done is you've got this sort of seasoned fans that have been here for many, many years, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, seen it all through the great times and the difficult times. They're saying, we've never seen a start like this to the season. And when they're believing, and they're the most sceptical of fans, then you know that maybe something could be beginning to happen. However, he has totally dismissed the idea that they should be named favourites for promotion after just two games. Mm. He says whoever's asking that question doesn't believe it either.
When you say that he's quite open to a chat about his philosophy and about football generally, especially now that maybe the national kind of papers have lost interest or written their think pieces for now, when you're chatting to him, how open is he? What does he say about the game? Are there any kind of anecdotes that give you a feel for him as a person to work with?
Yeah, there is. We're sort of getting to know him a bit, and he's sort of injecting a bit of humour into it. Look, what he says about the way the game is played, he says, look, I will not alter my style of play, and that is a high press, if you like, lots of movement, win the ball back high up the pitch. And that's in the simplest one, that's how it is. He will not change his philosophy. But then he will talk about individual players. If you say, look, there's a new lad, Jamie Shackleton, who's just made his debut at the weekend, will start tonight. And he, for example, they will talk about him and exactly what he brings to the party. They'll talk about him at length, about, his dynamism or what he's able to do on the ball, what balance he brings to the game, his passing abilities and stuff. So he's not afraid to go into real detail because he's got conviction in what he's doing. So I think as the season goes on, he will talk more and more. For example, captaincy. Liam Cooper has the captaincy this season. And he was asked, was that your choice? Why is he your captain? He said, I didn't choose him. The players have chosen him. But I would say this, he'd said, that Liam Cooper is an excellent captain. But he is the players' representative, not my representative. However, they've made a good choice. So quite a refreshing and different view of football in many, many ways. Mm. And I'd say of life as well. He's a real deep thinker. And a very humble man, really humble man, and I'm impressed with that.
If you're looking out for him, anyone watching Leeds over the next while, you'll see I think he's brought 8 in total, but you'll see his coaching staff on the sidelines pointing and jumping up and down and pulling players this way and that way and gesticulating the whole time. Bielsa's the bloke sitting on the blue bucket.
That's right. He's the one, which he says, he's really surprised at the headlines that has made, but it gives him a better vantage point, he says, than sitting in the dugout. And we've seen it, you know, it's become something of a, well, I think it's going to be something of a retail hit in the club shop here at Elland Road, I would have thought, before too long. But
sorry,
that's why
they're
he has
now
it.
Selling blue buckets in the merchandise shop.
Or they will be doing. They have said, I know the Angus Kinnear, the MD, said, look, no, this will definitely be happening. So just went to see which sponsor puts his name on it as well. So
what's a fair price for a blue bucket these days, a Bielsa bucket?
I tell you what, it will be priceless if they go all the way this season, wouldn't it? But
$19.99 for a bucket.
But incredible. So he has his own ways, his own intricacies, if you like, and his quirks. But his you're right about his staff, and he has plenty of them. They they seem to run a little bit in fear of him. And then one of them, of course, you will have seen for that first game of the season, was actually in the opposite stand to where he was in the dugout, shouting out instructions, which is totally within the laws of the game, to the players that at that point were on the left side of the pitch. So Barry Douglas and Gianni Alioski. So yeah, he's unconventional. That's a definite.
Yeah. Okay. Look, exciting times to come. And 9 games in last season, Leeds were top and then fell away. So I guess the hope is that Bielsa sustains this, and all the running stats are off the charts at the moment. So we have to see if that's sustainable as well. But I mean, geez, the thought of Bielsa with Leeds back in the Premier League—that is a tasty one.
It is a tasty one, and you say we are. And you make that's the perfect point. 9 games in last year, they were, you know, unbeaten, going really well. They went to Millwall. We sort of warned the head coach at the time, Thomas Christensen, look, this is a different game. And they go, no, it'll be all right. We know what to expect. We've all played in front of big crowds. He says, no, it's not the big crowd. It's just that it's Millwall. And at that point, they got found out. Hopefully, the players that he's now got, who've had that year's experience of the Championship under their belt, will actually be better equipped to deal with those sorts of situations. But you've got to say this. He's beaten 2 squads that are, you would say, amongst the favourites, or certainly Stoke, to be right up there at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Last year, they beat weak teams that either went down or were struggling.
OK, great. We must check them out. We'll certainly be watching the next time they're on the box. And the people of Yorkshire praying that the Adam Pope BBC curse is finally lifted by Bielsa. It's exciting times.
Thank you. It's good. I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, another... It's about time they got out of this division, there's no doubt. Is it going to be this season? At the beginning of it, I wouldn't have expected it. So I'm not saying nothing, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Adam.
Cheers.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.